Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
Wow. How's it going?
That's pretty good. We have a very amazing episode for y'all today. We are joined by Faye, aka Fattest Musa. He's a rapper. He's a delight. He's a very incredible human being. We talk about how he started rapping, his influences, his love for Atlanta, and a lot of things you might not expect.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, everybody. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm Shireen.
Hi, Shireen. I'm Anna.
Or Anna, depending on the person you're talking to.
It doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore.
Yeah, you're right. Nothing really matters. I am happy that like it's a cloudy day today. I think I have reverse seasonal depression. I get more sad when it's sunny, and I get happier when it's cloudy and gloomy.
I kind of, you know, it's been so hot that I've actually really enjoyed the fact that it's gloomy. Because I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, thank God. It's not like gloomy humid like you would get in like, I don't know, everywhere else, the East Coast. I don't know. But I like that it's like gloomy and kind of cold and windy so I can like exist without sweating when I walk my dog.
Yeah. Like usually when we're recording, we have to turn off the AC and it's miserable. But now it's fine. There's no AC and I'm chilling. Wow, what a riveting conversation. Let's bring in our guest. This little intro where we're making the guest wait. I'm always like so self-conscious about what we talk about. Do you feel that way? Like, I'm just like, they must think we're dumb.
No, I'm never. I am okay, the you're smartest very secure. Person alive, cool. So no one could ever possibly think I'm dumb.
Okay, well, it's good to know one of us is very secure. Anyway, we're just going to bring in our guest. He's a rapper. He is currently based in Atlanta, and I listened to some of his music just before this recording, and it's really fucking sick. It's Faye, a.k.a. Fattest Musa. Well.
Hey. What's up, guys?
What's up? Thanks for joining us.
I love the intro. You guys are giving me like a... You guys remember Daria?
Yeah.
getting a Daria vibe.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, we're very like low energy and
sad.
Have given up.
Yeah.
I mean, we have great stuff in the news today. We're talking Sharia law with abortion or some shit. I don't even know anymore.
I can't believe they even made that about Islamophobia. Like, that's just like beyond me. We're talking about the Texas heartbeat law or whatever they're calling it. Anyway, wow, what a pleasant note.
I don't give a shit anymore. Look how people act in this country. The civil liberties have proven to be disrespected in a way that you don't deserve it. You don't deserve civil liberties if you're going to act a fool like these Americans have been acting in this pandemic. And so, hey, sorry, guess what? Maybe you deserve Sharia law at this point because you don't know how to act. And you know, you deserve nothing. You deserve nothing. You don't deserve your civil liberties. As my mom always says, these Americans have way too many civil liberties. They just do what they want. They have zero respect. And guess what? I'm my mother and my father now. So fuck this country. They deserve nothing except for a vaccine, which is free.
Fattest is like, what did I get myself into?
Sorry, I've just had a fuck enough.
Yo, we fucking going to jail after this.
Anyways, wow. Fattest, I want to get to know, we both want to get to know all about you and how you establish yourself as this like really fucking sick rapper, especially because there's not a lot of Muslim Arab rappers that I could even think of. I feel like representation is really important in that regard, but that's a different conversation. We gotta rewind. I have to get better at that rewind sound. Fattest, where were you born and where did you grow up?
So I was born in Chicago to Palestinian refugees. And I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia.
How old were you when you moved to Atlanta?
10. So it was like 2000, 2001. I'm old. I'm 30.
We're both.
I'm 31.
31.
So how dare you?
So shut up.
Bitch, you ain't old. Okay, relax.
The vibe is definitely, I'm feeling 31.
Fair.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I've lived in this country, you know, for the majority of my life, I've lived after 9/11. So I've seen enough. I can't continue to live my life to be scared of these people. I have to speak my truth. And I'm so, you know, after the Trump presidency, I was in Iran when the fucking, when he called that Muslim ban, I was in a country that he had just banned. So I've been through enough with this bullshit. And I'm tired of like sitting around and trying to like mind my business and not say anything too loud because I'm a Muslim woman. I've had enough. You know, I do my prayer. Okay. I do my part as a Muslim woman. Okay. So you know what? I have released myself of that guilt, of that pain, of the trauma of my childhood and my family, the generational trauma. And I have chosen to live my life how I've chosen to live my life. So I'm going to go forth. I'm going to say what's on my mind. And I won't do it anymore. I won't pretend that I haven't felt the pain of being a Middle Easterner in this country for the majority of my life. So at this point, there's no stopping me. I will live my truth.
Respect.
Yeah, that's a soundbite right there. Yeah, I mean, I think being outspoken about certain issues, like, I think is definitely necessary. Like, when it comes to Palestine or when it comes to things that people are just, like, completely misinformed about. I mean, the ironic thing is about this Sharia law thing is that, like, abortion is even anti, like, Muslims are allowed to have abortions, like, allowed. Like, it never says in the Quran that you can't have an abortion. It also never says that in the fucking Bible, but, like, just, like, the doctrine of Christianity, how it's, like, transformed in this country. Now it's, like, this fucking Christian thing. But I don't know. I think every religion, or just religion in general, as, like, a concept, has the potential to just, like, kind of, unfortunately, be molded by people, you know, and the religion in this country has been molded in a way where it's like very fucking dumb and oppressive and like misogynistic and all this other stuff. Different conversation. Do you consider Chicago or Atlanta like your home then? Is it more Atlanta, like where you grew up?
Definitely Atlanta. Like, I never want to move from here. I'm not sure how y'all feel about where you guys live, but like Atlanta is the greatest place on earth and I feel blessed to be here. But like when it comes to sports teams and shit, I'm like super Chicago. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, you have to figure out that loyalty.
I mean, Atlanta sports teams are fucking terrible. They just, I don't know if you know, but they give you hope and then they let you down like really slow. Like, so they'll make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and then they'll fucking lose. And like the Falcons will be up 28-3 in the third quarter and then they'll lose. So
it's like an emotional roller coaster. You know, you can't take that. You just need someone to be good all the time.
Or suck, or really fucking suck, get blown out by 80 like every game, and we that's what we expect.
Yeah,
but like you just never know.
Yeah, I don't really know much. I don't even know who the Atlanta teams are. Who are the Atlanta teams?
We got the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh yes, okay.
And Braves, and then the Atlanta Hawks. Mm. We used to have a hockey team, Atlanta Thrashers, but that shit ended quick.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really know people in Atlanta played hockey. Maybe that was ignorant of me.
They don't. That's what I hate. that's why I ended.
I have a question for you. So you know, you said your parents are Palestinian refugees. When did they leave Palestine?
So my mom was 9 and my dad was like 13.
Wow.
Okay.
They left a town called Jenin, Palestine, or kicked out. And they thought it was just going to be like a, you know, temporary thing. So they packed a few bags. Mm-hmm. They just weren't allowed back.
Yeah,
right.
Dad kind of was like a failure at school. So my grandpa was just like, yo, like, here's a $600 one-way ticket. Get the fuck out my face. Like, go to America. I don't want to hear from you again. And then he came back. You know how all Middle Eastern dads come to this country and they wild out?
What do you mean by that? But I think my dad is pretty square.
No. I'm sorry, but that's what I thought for the longest. But like, you got to understand, our dads came here during the make love, not war era. So that's just something that I had to come to terms with. So after he realized that there wasn't shit for him here, he went back to Jordan and married my mom.
Oh. And it just so happened they were from the same Palestinian town?
Yeah, same Palestinian town. They lived in a refugee city in Jordan called Zarqa, which was built by like Palestinian refugees, like not real architects. So if you go to like the old town in Zerka, it's like all the buildings are like leaning.
I've heard about that. They're like unproportional and like not, they don't really like make logical sense or something.
It was building like a Lego set.
Yeah. Okay. Both Anna and I have Muslim backgrounds. I was raised Muslim. Both my parents are Muslim. I was really sheltered growing up. My whole family is Muslim. My dad's family is like a very strict Muslim. My mom's family is not as strict, but for a while, I like really rejected all kinds of religion. I just hated being controlled and told what to do. But I've kind of come back around to identifying as a Muslim just as far as like culture. Like it's a part of me that's always going to be there. And so I think I'll always be a Muslim in that regard, if that makes sense.
Tight. How about you, Anna?
Yeah, I was raised Muslim and I still consider myself Muslim. I have my own way of doing things, as you heard earlier. My dad is secular and my mom is devout Muslim, so I've kind of found like a good balance of that in my life because my mom never really like forced us to do anything. She was just always like doing her own thing. Mm-hmm. But we like grew up going to like mosque and stuff. So I've always really enjoyed like the more spiritual like side of it all because my mom, like, you know, she does her thing. She honestly like runs like four different Quran study groups, which I'm like, damn girl, she is doing it.
So she's killing it.
Yeah, no, she is really killing it. But so she, you know, prays five times a day, does her thing. Very religious type of mom who goes, remember, God's watching right before you go out. And you're like, oh, right. But I just seeing like how like self-actualized she is, like nothing really bothers her. And like literally like when coronavirus came through and the pandemic started, like she had such a like calm. Also, she was in Iran when the pandemic started and Iran got hit hard. And she got coronavirus in Iran because she was there for my grandma's funeral. And every time I would hit her up, she's like, you know what? It is what it is. If I die, I die. That's God's way. And I'm not going to sit here and like freak out. I'm just going to enjoy my life if that's the case. And I was like, first, I was like, damn, you are out of control. Who talks like that? And then I was like, but then you know what? She has this inner peace that you really can't hate on because she's literally not letting it kill her vibe. Yeah. The best way to say it, which yeah. I found so commendable. And like in the last year, I've really kind of like found my way back to Islam in that way. Like, you know, I've been like rereading the prayers. Like, I've just been like, I want that sort of level of peace mm-hmm. and to not be like constantly like worrying about yeah. what's next and just being like, you know what, it is what it is. Like, what happens to me is what happens to me. If I live through a global climate change apocalypse, and that's what I live through. And that's okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's the way to show your kids religion, to be honest. Like, she's doing her own thing. She's not forcing anything on you. I think my dad had this, like, idea that, like, if he didn't make sure we were Muslim and married Muslim men or whatever his idea of, like, maintaining that is, like, we would just forget our culture. And I think he kind of implemented things in a way I didn't appreciate and, like, felt controlled by. And I think that's what made me reject every kind of religion. I just hated everything. God doesn't exist, all this other stuff. And like part of me still doesn't believe in God, but the Muslim part doesn't have anything to do with that for me. The Muslim part is like a cultural pillar that's like just will never leave my identity. And I've accepted that that's like a beautiful thing. But what about you? What about you, Fadis?
I actually identify as Muslim and I try to follow the pillars of Islam to like my best ability. So mm-hmm. I pray, alhamdulillah, fast and you know, give charity and things of that nature. Not perfect in any sense of the word.
No one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people think what I'm doing like is actually like forbidden music and making a living off of it. But my dad is really secular. He's not like a devout Muslim, but my mom was. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the older I grew, like the more I started practicing mm-hmm. Islam and understand it. And Anna made a good point. It was basically like that peace that you find within your religion. I think that's priceless.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never push my religion on anybody or my beliefs on anybody.
Yeah. And that's what it's supposed to be. It's an extremely, regardless of what you believe in, it's such a personal thing. Like, again, like this country does not understand that. It like implements it on like a legal scale. But I think any type of spirituality, it's like it's only for you.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to just, yeah, make you at peace. And that's the only thing that matters. Anything other than that is not spirituality or religion. It's just something else.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely feel you, man. I mean, like I said, even in the Quran, it says there's a verse in there that says you have your religion and I have mine. Like, which the verse is lekum dinakum waliya din. It's just kind of like, yo, you believe what you believe. I believe what I believe. My best friend is, are you Christian?
Sure.
Okay. He's just, you know, things have changed. But yeah, he grew up in a Christian household and things like that. And that's my best friend. So I don't look at people, oh, you're Muslim. Oh, you're better than somebody who's Christian. I honestly just judge somebody by their character.
Yeah.
And they're just, if they're dope, then I'm going to fuck with them.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be, honestly. So let's, I'm going to go back to the timeline. You're 11 or 10 and you're in Atlanta now. What was growing up in Atlanta like as far as like being a young Palestinian American kid?
So I came, like, it was like terrible timing. As soon as I moved to Atlanta, I hated it from the jump. Like, Chicago is everything. And we have like this weird negative connotation, or we had this weird negative connotation as Southerners. Especially in like elementary school social studies class, they'd be like, we beat the Confederates and we're the Union and da da da. And I'm like, yo, fuck them boys on that side. So when I moved there, it was just like, yo, everybody's redneck, backwood, like that. I was kind of rebelling. And then to top that off, September 11th happened and people really weren't fucking with me. So I attributed that to me being a Chicagoan, but in reality, it was because of me being Palestinian or me being. For me being brown looking, because at that point they just grouped every like Indians and Sikhs and these guys like that had nothing to fucking do with it. They were just grouped in with Arabs. They kind of got the short end of the stick because they didn't do shit. But just looking back on it, it's kind of funny. But
yeah,
my mom, I remember she was just talking about the situation and she was just like, oh, these Islam extremists.
Yeah.
And I just remember, because my mom worked at the school as a paraprofessional and it was fifth grade. I just remember going to my mom and be like, hey, that music teacher was just like talking shit about us. So like it became a whole thing, but people didn't even know how to act. There was no like, you know, being PC and politically correct nowadays and shit like that. And like bigotry is highlighted and shit now. But back then, man, there wasn't really a filter. And I know it was only 2000, 2001. Back then, like you could. You know what I'm saying? Eminem was coming out with albums saying the F word,
yeah.
You know, to homosexuals and stuff. And people were just letting him rock. You know what I'm saying? Like he was he's the hottest selling rap artist. Like that wouldn't fly nowadays. And of course, it's because Eminem's white. But that's the only reason why it flew. But that's kind of how it was back then. Like growing up in Atlanta, I didn't really get a good sense of political correct. What is it? Political correctedness?
Yeah. I mean, both of us were also that same age during that time. And again, yeah, a lot more things were just very open and out in the open. And like, I remember having conversations with my mom being like, why are they talking about this that way? Why I feel like weird about when they talk about Muslims and Arabs or whatever. And what I got really mad about, honestly, was when, I mean, obviously it's not fair that other religions or ethnicities or like the Sikhs got lumped in. But what started bothering me was that like, we're not Arabs versus just like, we're Sikhs, but we're not that. Or like, it was not even the Sikhs, but like, if they were lumped in with us, it was almost like, that's not what we are. It's like, instead of being like, this is an extreme.
It's respectability politics in a sense. Like Kanye said it best, like, even if you're in the bands, you're still an N-word in a coup. I know a lot of people from different sides of Africa who are born here, like East African. They're like, oh, I'm not black. I'm East African. It's just like, cool. Tell that to the cop that pulls you over at fucking midnight. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I definitely understand what you're saying. Like when people are trying to kind of veer away from, oh, we're really far from where that shit happened at. We're in Asia. They're in the Middle East. You know what I'm saying? So no, I definitely understand where you're coming from. It was just kind of like, we were the scapegoats and you know what I'm saying? Just like anybody, I feel like just like any group in that situation, they would try to remove themselves from the situation or try to, you know what I'm saying? Point the finger at that person because in history, the heat has been on, you know, even in the last, like, since Trump's presidency, the heat has been on Latinos and Hispanics and people who jump the border and are out here killing. And you know what I'm saying? And I just feel like there's always a scapegoat, race.
Yeah. It just happens to be us this decade. Like, it was the Russians, every bad guy in every movie or whatever. I think it's like goes through cycles. This cycle has lasted a little long, in my opinion, but I really hope the next cycle, I think it's already happening. Like, the villain is the white man, you know? Like, that's what I hope that happens. We're going to take our first quick break and we'll be right back. So don't go anywhere.
And we are back with the rapper Faye. Wow.
Yo.
Question, where did that name come from?
I don't really have like an elaborate like story about it. It's honestly just one of those. My real name's Fattis or Ferris. Mm. And my homies used to joke around, like, you know how there's abbreviations for like rappers like Jay-Z, they call him Jay, and Kanye, they call him Ye.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like Faye. Oh. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, that shit's tight.
Yeah.
And I just ran with it.
The greatest rappers of all time have a one syllable little name and they all rhyme. So good company you're in.
Exactly.
I like that. It's simple. It makes sense, but it's also like, it's cool. Like you said,
thanks.
It's cool. I like it. I would name an actual child Faye because I like names like that, that are
Faye
simple.
Faye is really
to
pretty.
The point.
I mean, also girls are called Faye, like F-A-Y-E. I like a unisex, androgynous, any kind of name that can be any kind of person, you know?
Hey, shout out to the androgynouses. Yo, check this out, though. I looked up what Faye meant on Urban Dictionary, and it was just like a drunken person, like that's always stumbling and shit. And I was like, no. Hmm. And then Faye is like a really famous, and I don't want to get flack for this, but it's an Asian name. I'm thinking Vietnam. I'm thinking South Korea. It's either one of them. But like, that's a really prevalent. It's like John Smith for like a so. But if you Google me, I'm the first Faye that comes up.
That's all that matters. With me. That's all that matters.
Google me right now.
Here we go.
Google.
I just want to know that it's not biased to my phone.
Yeah, it's just your face. I see it. Your SoundCloud, your Twitter, your Instagram.
Mm-hmm. The first one for me is your Instagram, then your SoundCloud, then your
Spotify,
Twitter.
Spotify, Facebook. Vader.
And then Fader, yeah.
Atlanta Immersive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the ones that I read. Yeah. Well, in that article, bring it up, I did read that you initially like thought of the word pharaoh. Is that like a old story?
Yeah, that was...
You said I could talk about anything. Nothing's off limits.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, that's definitely not a big deal. But yeah, that's such a... I was a teenager, man. And I was just like, yeah, pharaoh, like fucking Egyptian, you know, leader. And I'm not even Egyptian. It was just like a really bad take on trying to be like I'm a Middle Eastern rapper. Let's put tablas in every song. Like, I ain't trying to do that shit no more.
Well, talk about that a little bit. So, well, first, let us tell us how you came to love rapping and like what drew you to that genre. And also, I'll ask you about like the transition from like wanting to be like the Arab rapper to just like wanting to be a rapper who is Arab. But first, let's start with how you found rap.
So my homie, like, this was back in the day. I was 16, so like 2006. And like the plug and play studios weren't like as prevalent as they are now because technology has changed. And he was like that weird kid in the neighborhood that always like had a new hobby every other day. And he bought like a mic and like recording equipment. So I was really influenced by like Dipset, Cam'ron and them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to rap like that. I just wanted to rap about drugs, money and murder and sex at 16.
Right.
And I did. And it was terrible and it sucked really bad. And honestly, Kelechi was also in a group. So while I was rapping about drugs, money, sex, murder, four things that I had never dealt with before. At that time, definitely was a this, especially the sex part. My homie Kelechi, who's with me right now, we've been friends for so long. He was actually in a Christian rap group, which is, and he was in a Christian rap group with his brother called Theology, like theology,
right.
Like Ooh. He was a fucking cornball. then there was another group called The Movement. And so we were best friends in like this high school setting. And honestly, Kelechi, like looking back on it, he was the guy that he knew how to work like FL Studio, and he was producing and cutting samples and like all his Kanye shit, like real early.
Nobody was doing this at our age or around where we were from. And I just was really like impressed. He had a really cool setup at the house at the time. And he was learning how to engineer and shit. And then we also, we had the same class. They randomly came out with a diss record against me. And like, this is my friend. Like, I see him every day in class. I'm like, what the fuck compelled you to talk about me like that?
And, what were they saying? Was it like hate crime?
So like his, it was pretty hate. It was pretty racist. Oh, definitely wow. Racist. I'll be honest with you. I don't think Kaleji honestly kept the integrity and he was made it about the lyrics. But the other two guys in the group, which I'm not going to say their names, you know, I wish the best for them right now.
Well, okay, when they were 16, come on, you can talk some shit about some 16-year-olds.
No, I'm be honest with you, fuck those guys, man. Fuck those guys. Yeah. Wow, that shit hurt.
Yeah, but, it sure did. That's fucked.
They were calling me Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi. They're way off, just way off.
Yeah.
But that's what that kind of plays into our conversation earlier. Like all the Sikhs and the Indians got grouped into like, so everybody was just like, oh, you Indian, like you guys are terrorists. So
yeah. Right. Oh, you're brown. All the browns are the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mahatma Gandhi, I got called the F word, F-A, you know, we don't say that word around here, but we did grow up. Transparency purposes, we did grow up. Like if we didn't like something, we'd be like, oh, that shit gay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very common. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't want to present myself as some type of social justice warrior because I still say some very problematic shit, but I check myself when I say it. I'm like, that was wrong. Mm-hmm. And Kaleji has a really good gauge on that type of stuff. Every time Kaleji dates a girl, she turns lesbian after. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I think it's a different issue.
Like, or they're like super lesbian and they're like, yo, like you're different. Like I usually don't like men, but I like you for some reason. Cause there's a good balance of feminine and masculine energy, I think.
He's in the background like, shut up. What are you talking about?
Nah, that's my boy. And he's a man's man. And I can vouch for him any day of the man, any day of the year. This is a beefy, masculine, meat and potatoes. You know what I'm saying? He hasn't had a vegetable in years. He said carbs and sex. That's what he runs on.
I can't wait till we get him on and he rips you to shreds.
Like a rabbit hole, but I love talking about Kaleji because I told you he's a character. But yeah, so that's what it is. You know, we've all said some problematic shit. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to the LGBTQ community. Shout out to the alphabet boys and girls. We love them.
Yeah. Wait, so, okay, you're 16 and you hear a diss track about you. That probably hurts, but did that isolate you in like the rap community in your school or like your circles or what was that like?
I'm going to be honest, nobody gave a fuck that we made music except for me and Kaleji. So it was just like, that shit got probably 3 total plays.
Oh, great. Great.
But it did hurt me when I saw him because he just like dapped me up and acted like everything was cool. But like, just like 24 hours before I was on MySpace and that shit dropped. He dropped a bomb on us, bro. And I was just like, we're in the neighborhood. Like all the guys were like listening. Like, I can't believe they did that shit. So I rebutted. My shit was very problematic as well. Took shots at their, you know, them being like choir boys and touching each other and things and bad stereotypes of the church and things of that nature. It's really, goddamn, talking about it. It was just really bad all around. But honestly, 14 years later, I'm at Kaleji's crib right now. He's still my engineer. He's still my best friend. And I'll die for him.
That's a beautiful friendship. If it can survive that, it can survive anything. So you're in high school, you're really interested in rap. Are you telling like your parents about like wanting to pursue it potentially? Or like what's the vibe there with like rapping and then being Arab, Muslim, Palestinian?
Oh no, I had no goals at 16. We did this shit to kill time. I didn't go back to my parents. I was like, yo, I'm going to the stew, mom. Like, but I was I was as mischievous as I was as a kid. I was kind of a square at the same time. It was weird. Like me and Kaleji would make teachers cry, but like I'd still get all A's in classes. So it was just it was just hard to hate on me, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what did you want to do when you were in high school? Like job wise?
did kids think about what they wanted to do at 16?
Yeah, I wanted to be a lawyer.
No, yeah, fuck that. I was working at Publix at 15 years old, and I thought I was going to get rich that way.
Oh, okay. I think, like, I really don't like that pressure. Like, I feel like a lot of high schools, in my experience, like, in my personal experience, they always are just, like, figure out what you're going to do and take your SATs and all this stuff. And, like, my sister had always wanted to be a doctor, so that was easy for her. But if you want to be creative or, like, go into an atypical field, I kind of felt lost. Because, again, like, I didn't have the confidence to say I wanted to be this or that. It was more just, like, floating around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it happened later on in my life where I had to break the news to my parents. Yo, I'm not going to be a businessman. I'm not going to be an accountant, and I'm not going to be a doctor. And those are those, like, you know, those main careers of first-generation Americans. You know, parents. The parents, they have these expectations of you. They kind of I went to college, actually, and graduated. I actually graduated valedictorian randomly.
Randomly? How random could that be? Fool, you have to be studying.
Yeah, see that was the thing. It didn't happen like that. I studied sociology though, so you know what I'm saying? A lot of people were like, "Well, it's because you studied sociology, it was really easy." But I did learn a lot about the LGBTQ community in sociology, things that I would never have learned if I didn't.
I have a question. Where did you go to school? Where'd you go to college?
Georgia State University.
Okay. So like when you were, you know, coming up and like I'm assuming when you went to college, did you at that point think you wanted to be a rapper or were you just still like doing it as a hobby?
Yeah, at that point, that's when I was like, but I had really lofty goals. Like I wanted to be like the hottest shit out. So I look back, you know, Facebook reminds you of what you said 10 years ago and you just kind of cringe at everything that comes up. I literally delete every single old comment that comes up like on like a anniversary because I was a fucking wild one, but and an idiot. But yeah, I was just like, all my statuses were like, this is temporary. I'm not going to graduate. College sucks. I'm going to be a musician. Like, that was every single status. I was like, yo, I was fucking annoying. And it was just like two likes on every single one of them. It was bad. But yeah, Facebook does a good job of reminding you where you came from.
Yeah. At least they're good at something. But okay, let's take our second break. We'll be right back. We have so many more questions for you. And we're back. You had just mentioned that you eventually broke the news to your parents. One, how did they take it? And two, at that point, were you still kind of trying to hone in your identity as an Arab man into your rapping?
So my dad is a entrepreneur and he opened up a restaurant because he was a chef for like 25 years. And it's like Mediterranean, quick, fast cuisine. It's actually really good in my unbiased opinion. And if it was up to my dad, I'd be fucking making falafel in the kitchen right now and taking over the family business and where he started, which is amazing. And I take a lot of his model of like, you know, just that leap of faith. And I mean, his stakes were way higher. He was broke and had four kids and a wife and just was like, yo, I'm gonna open this shit. And if it doesn't work, that's it. We're on the street. So I kind of take his model of like, you got to really take that leap of faith. But it's definitely, the stakes aren't as high, but when I broke it to him, he seemed like he was supportive. But like I told you, if it was up to him, he'd be like, yo, like, I want you making hummus back here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And which I'm not above that. It's just not for me. You know what I'm saying? I don't have a passion for making. I love eating food, but I don't have a passion for like making it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that was his creative release.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Then my mom, you know, I told my mom, she's like your stereotypical, like dramatic Arab woman. Yeah. And she was just like, nobody's going to marry you. And how the hell am I going to tell people like that my son is a rapper? But now, like anytime we go somewhere, like especially if there's, because Atlanta's like the black Mecca. So like my mom gets her hair done at a black salon and stuff like that. And like every time she'll leave the salon, like I get a follow request from like the salon, like, owner, and she was like, I tell the woman that you are a robber. And I was just like, well, this is fucking weird. Pick a side, man. You love me or not? You respect it or not? But anytime she gets around like a more urban crowd, which is just a name for, you know, when she's around like, you know, in a black setting, she'll be like, yo, my son's a rapper. Like,
You know what I'm saying? Let's
share some pride. You know?
Let's connect on that. We have something in common. Wow. Just like,
I mean, that's a little problematic on her part, but still really, really cute.
It's, you know, and we try to teach it every day. You know, you can't say that, can't do that. But unfortunately, our parents are victims of European influence, British influence, white supremacy. The media shows all Black people as thieves and robbers. Yeah. But on the other end, the media shows all these white folks out here, the Arabs are all terrorists. So, you know what I'm saying? Just got to use your head, so.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, like, for years, my dad would be like, Black people are like this. And for years, we'd be like, like, literally cutting him off to be like, can't say that, that's racist. My dad would be like, how is it racist? And you're like, how many times do we have to tell you? And we've got to a point where you see him be like, well, and I'd be like, no. You're right. That's not a good thing to say. And it's like, it's working. It's only taken 70 years for this fool to not say really problematic shit out loud, but he's actually getting it finally. Like, of being like, no, you're right. I shouldn't say that. I've come a long way. And you're like, oh my. It only took, you know, what? I'm 30. My siblings are older, but like, just years of us being like, nope, can't say that. That's racist. Yeah. And it got worse because my brother went to jail for a while. So, like, there was a lot of like, this and this, you know, like you're just talking shit and you're like, you can't say that. Your son's in jail because your son personally made choices that put him in jail. It has nothing to do with anyone else. You can't be blaming other races. Your son made a choice and now he's in jail. And then it just took forever for my dad to be like, fine, you're right. I mean, yes, there was racism. Your son was in jail longer than he should have because 9/11. But that's just, you know, it is the way it is, but you can't be blaming other race. You literally can't blame Black people because your son's in jail. Like, you can't do that because your son is a person who has the ability to make choices, and he was a grown man when he made those choices. So, really, you should blame yourself for potentially, you know, having such a cold heart while we were growing up and refusing to hug us or say I love you or acknowledge any of our emotions or our trauma of being raised with you. So you should look within. But of course, that shit doesn't, you know. I will say now that his testosterone has lowered, he's more willing to, like, actually hear us out. But, like, there's so much of that, like, denial of, like, how I gave you a roof over your house. How did I do anything wrong? And it's like, yeah, that's not enough. When you're a human unfortunately, being, and you can shut all that down, but guess what? It's going to actually affect the people that you're technically raising, you know, like the people that you are supposed to be giving back to because you brought them into this world. But, oh God, the inherent racism because of white supremacy is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
My dad always says that I gave you a roof over your head. It was just like, bro, nobody told you to have me. Like, I'm here right now against my will. So that's the bare minimum. And that's why I feel like I'm not ready to be a dad, because I'm not ready to put in, you know, the emotional work for my kids and stuff like that. But a lot of our parents grew up and our dads grew up, if we were lucky enough to have them in our lives, and they thought about, yo, as long as I support financially, that's all my kids need from me. But we just needed a fucking hug, man. I just wanted to be loved. Like, I just wanted to be held.
Like, yeah. I mean, like, it was like financially supporting you is like their love language in a way. Being like, look how much I care about you. I'm doing this. And honestly, like, I feel like all our parents, aside from like obvious like problematic abusive ones, like they're all trying their best, you know? Yeah. And I think as I grew older, I really like accepted that and kind of saw them as just like people trying their best, even though like there was a lot of issues I had growing up and trauma or whatever. At the very end of the day, they're just like, they're trying their best. And honestly, I think they did a good job for the most part, you know? So anyways,
they did all right.
I want to know.
I'm going to be honest. I have something to say. I don't know if you guys grew up with your parents comparing you guys to other kids down the street or like, oh, so-and-so. You know what I thought would be hilarious? If I started comparing my parents in front of them to other parents. Just like, yo, why are you not like Hazdo? Like, she's so ambitious. Like, you just sit on your fucking ass all day and watch fucking novellas and shit. You know what I'm saying?
We kind of did that with, like, for both of us probably being girls, it was like, why is this family allowing sleepovers? Why can't I go out past 6 p.m. or like wear shorts or whatever? It's all those little things.
That's not critical enough. You had to hit them where it hurts. You gotta attack their
No, but like those things would just reinforce them being like, well, we're different. Like whatever. It would kind of just like double down instead of actually doing anything, you know?
So you could usually tell how racist somebody is by how hard they emphasize the B in black.
Oh.
So if they say black, like black, they're probably very racist. So that's a really good indicator.
Black. Is that a thing that you learned in Atlanta? Or like, I've never heard that before.
It's just my theory. But if there's a heavy emphasis on the B, that person is probably very racist.
I'm going to think about your theory going forward. And really
honestly, just think about it. Think about it. Like somebody's like, yo, not the black people. And they just like, they hold it all. It's over with. Like, it's just like, okay, that person's racist. Well, let's move forward.
Okay. Noted. Everyone out there, really think about Faddis's theory. And maybe it's right. Maybe it's wrong. We'll take a poll next year.
Okay.
Take a poll next year.
Next year. All right.
Yeah. So in the beginning, you said you were trying to really mesh your Arab identity into your music. I want to know when that shifted into just like, I just want to be a rapper who happens to be Arab versus like, I'm an Arab rapper.
I think it shifted with my talent level. And, you know, as I started doing this more and more, you know, you start progressing more and more, you become better. And I started playing with a lot of melody and I loved chords and I loved, you know, like even like when you listen to gospel music, like gospel samples and chords and melody. And that's just the music that really moves me. And I kind of just ventured away from that because my old producer was just making records with like tabla drums and like a oud that didn't really have any chord progression. And I was just like, yo, this shit kind of weak. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like coming into, I mean, because I'm a guest in hip hop. It's a black dominated and founded art style. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to come in here and be like, I'm an Arab and I'm rapping better than the blacks. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to do that. You see how I emphasized it right there?
Yeah, I caught that.
Exactly. That. And I did that on purpose for anybody listening. But yeah, like I didn't want to be that guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think we give a pass to a lot of people, like even in the NBA, like a white dude will do like a basic crossover and they'd be like, oh my God, that motherfucker going crazy. But like every NBA black person player does that shit on a daily basis. And it just doesn't get praised enough because that's what's expected. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of saw it. And the more I grew up, the more I realized it was distasteful. It was corny to play up. Oh, I'm an Arab rapper. Like, I'm not just a rapper. I'm an Arab rapper. And it's just like, that's just weak as fuck. I'm just, and like you said earlier, which I love, I'm just an artist, a rapper who happens to be Arab. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Not an Arab rapper. There's a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I also think like, I feel like we need to get there on all stages. Yeah, Rami has a TV show, but like Rami, it's a show about a family. It's not a show about an Arab family. Like they just happen to be Arab.
Right.
Like
yeah.
I feel like love we need Rami. To get there where not everyone's like, tokenizing this show because like see we did something
now let's like, move on and do another white story or whatever
yeah,
you know?
Or like you know like yeah. We Are Lady Parts where it's like they're a punk band who happen to be all Muslim like which it shouldn't just all be about like,
is that the trans punk band
there's a queer member but if you haven't seen it we highly recommend it. Well it's a TV show that is about a Muslim punk band that comes together. And they're all Muslim and they're all badass and stuff. And
they're all
I think
women.
It's on. They're all, yeah, they're women. And I don't know. They all just look so cool.
There has to be. There's a real live like rendition of this. I don't think it's three women, but I think it's like two queer women and like a dude or something. But they're Muslim and they're a rock like punk band. They're pretty dope.
We'll do some digging. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll look them up. But yeah, Rami. I loved Rami because first off, it highlighted a lot of issues that we are not comfortable enough to talk about. Everybody, most people like in the Arab realm, like have that gay uncle or that gay cousin or something that nobody talks about. And then you keep asking your parents, like, is he gay? And they're like, no, he's just raised around his mom. I'm just like, nah, that man's gay. he is gay. And it doesn't make me love him any less. Like, just tell the truth. It's kind of like one of those situations. But a lot of people I talk to are like, yo, it's hard to watch. It's provocative. And it's just like, that's what makes great art. And randomly, I actually got really cool with Dave on Rami.
Dave
Merhedge, yeah.
He's so funny.
He's really cool. We follow each other on Instagram. I ran his merch this season. Like, I did his merch for him. Really good, down-to-earth guy. He has a new comedy special coming out. And he actually chose one of my records for the intro.
That's amazing. You
know, he really looked out for me. Got me. Yeah, man, got me paid, man. He's a great dude, man. He's a really good dude. I think he's very talented. So, fuck with him.
That's the thing. Like, I am so... Like, it's a long time coming, but, like, having a community of, like, creative Arab, Muslim, like, Swana region people, like, I think that's so valuable and, like, so needed because, like, it's the same way as you. I think I really ignored that I was Arab or Muslim or even Syrian for when I was, like, making films and stuff because I was like, I don't want to be just known as this. Like the Syrian director, the Syrian whatever. But then, Siri just activated. Okay.
Classic.
Yeah, I think when you're creative, you just want to be seen as like a creative person who is just a person. I really hope that the more this community like flourishes, whether it's like you collaborating with Dave or whatever, it's like we just have each other's backs, you know, the same way like so many other communities have each other's backs, like nepotism or whatever. Not nepotism, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It is a sense of that. But there's no problem to put little hints of your culture and your upbringing into your art.
There's
not an issue with that. But I have a problem when it's the whole theme all the time, every time.
That was my issue too. You have to find a balance. And for me, or I'm sure so many people out there, like I didn't feel like Arab enough to even comment on some things, or like I didn't feel enough on either side to like really claim anything. But then you just grow up and you claim your identity in whatever way you want to.
Yeah. Like I have a record called Wallahi, and that's as like Arab as it gets. But like I grew up in Atlanta in the Decatur area where there's like a lot of Somalian refugees. And Wallahi was just a common name. It got adopted by everyone, African Americans, mm-hmm. Latinos. They would say Wallahi it was just a cultural term at that point. So
yeah.
I have a song like that, and you know, it doesn't take away from the fact. I mean, my dad. The truth is, my dad did pay the bills while making hummus and falafel. Like that's how our upbringing. So I'm not gonna not talk about it because it's that's a little gimmicky. No, like that's exactly what happened. But like mm-hmm. I said, when it's your overall theme and that's what you're selling. I'm the Arab. I have belly dancers in my video.
Yeah.
I'm on a
magic
carpet.
It's almost like encouraging, fetishizing the culture.
It's like, yeah, it's like the Mia Khalifa tip. Like when she came out, her big debut, she was wearing a hijab, you know? And the reason why Mia Khalifa got so popping is because all these white folks fetishize about Middle Eastern women in that regard. And it's just mm-hmm. like genius marketing, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
I will say, though, quite the socialist now. Really, really loving what Mia's up to these days. She's out here.
Made a pivot.
She got paid like $12,000 for all those movies. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Yeah. That's whack.
She came out on an article and was just like, yo, like they really like used and abused me. And I was like, yo, that sucks, man. All those people. Because she was the hottest out. She was dropping the hottest shit ever.
They really stiffed her or whatever the word is. Yeah, I remember reading that and I was just like... Like she was so
they stiffed
famous.
Her.
Oh god. Ah,
hey, you use the word.
I thought of it when I said it and I was like, please don't pick up on that.
she said they really stiffed her. And then this guy said, stiffed her.
sorry. But I do, I really like I follow her online and I think she like stands for a lot of really like progressive shit now. And I you know what? I fuck with her. I fuck with Mia Khalifa.
Hey. Hey, respect, you can't shun people who worked in that industry, you know?
Yeah.
Most of these guys who are shunning these women are the ones with the jergens, you know what I'm saying, and the dirty socks in their room, you feel me?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't do that. But, yeah, respect to her, man. I really wish she got paid a little bit more. But, honestly, she has a platform now, and I hope she's happy.
I mean, she's making it work. I think, thankfully, she came out the other side, and now she's like her own person. Like, she only worked in the porn industry for like a couple of months, really. Like, she wasn't even working that long. That was all she was known for. And I think it's nice to see someone like just be who they are versus like what the box they were put into is. Yeah,
absolutely.
We're like kind of nearing the end of the podcast. Maybe like the last couple sections. We have a couple more questions for you. I want to know about like the current stuff you're doing, what's coming up. But first, I'm sorry, we have to take one last break and we'll be right back. And we're back. We want to know what you're currently working on. Anything you want to plug? I want to hear about your music. I want to hear, even like, tell us your favorite song that people can listen to if they don't know you already. Just say whatever you want now.
Cool. So I just dropped an album this year called Bake Sale, 10 records. I'm coming out with a deluxe this year, hopefully. It's going to be 13 records. And get this, it's called Baker's Dozen, which is 13. Nice. Cheeky, huh?
That's tight.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Whoever's on my marketing team needs a promotion.
And it's out everywhere, right? It's like Spotify. Yeah, it's on
iTunes, Spotify, Tidal. If you don't have a subscription, it's on SoundCloud. It's on Audio Mac. You could literally listen to it anywhere. My favorite record from the album probably has to be Everyday People. It's a really good record. Mm-hmm. And then I really like Wilt with my brother Kelechi on it.
Okay, I haven't listened to that one, but I did listen to Everyday People. I was listening to it in the order of what was popular on Spotify, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And so I first heard The Scrubs, then I heard Everyday People, and it kept going from there. And I just like, I really appreciate the way you sample things. Like, I think it becomes something else. I just respect that kind of thing because like some of my favorite artists do that. And it becomes this like beautiful idea of like just like decades of music into one. Yeah.
That's what music is, man. Very few things are new ideas from the foundation. Like, a lot of rap is sampled by James Brown and and those guys. So
it's like almost paying respect, you know? It's almost just like, this is where I draw inspiration from. And this is like, instead of just like claiming it as your own and being like, not even like maybe making your own beat that just sounds exactly like that, you're just like actually being like, this is what it
is. You're flipping it. So yeah, we call it flipping it. And I'm big on that. I'm big on the soulful. Like, I'm a 90s, like, I grew up on 90s R&B and early 2000s hip hop. So like, that's my favorite shit to sample. So I used to sample R. Kelly a lot until I watched
that documentary.
Yeah. I was sick to my stomach for 2 weeks. I don't know why it affected me so much, but I'm from Chicago and R. Kelly is like our Michael Jackson.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think we all kind of like, you know, I was 1990, like, I Believe I Can Fly, Space Jam, you know, that kind of shit. Like, I think we all had a little bit of R. Kelly, like, just the energy with us. And then, like, boom, evil motherfucker. And you're like, oh, my
motherfucker God, was a super villain, man. I mean, this man was recording I Believe I Could Fly while molesting girls in the same session. There was a mattress in the middle of the bed. And he would take a tape and then he'd be like, cool, I'm going to be right back. And then he just goes back and finishes I Believe I Could Fly. And then it was on Space Jam.
Everything you thought you knew, you're like, oh, no.
I've seen it, heard it all at that point.
I would sing that song all the time.
We would sing that song at, like, school fucking events. Like, at, like, the, we would all, as a class, sing I Believe I Can Fly, like, in fifth grade at, like, a concert event at our school. Like, that shit's fucked.
That's so dark.
It's so fucked up. Like, I've been on my fitness tip lately, so I've been climbing this mountain. And before I watched the documentary, I used to climb the mountain to World's Greatest by R. Kelly. And I would cry when I got to the top. And now I can't listen to that shit anymore.
Do you have a new song for that now?
So emotional. Back That Ass Up Now. I get to the top, play Juveniles, like, Back That Ass Up, and start crying. just had to fucking switch it up, you know what I'm saying?
But I love that for you. At the very top, you're just like, oh my God, I'm so, like, emotional. Back That Ass
Up. And as soon as it drops, you just start crying. But yeah, I'm not really an emotional guy. I don't really show a lot of like emotion in terms of crying, but like, that song makes me cry. And the fact that I don't even feel comfortable listening to it anymore really, really hurts. But you know what you gonna do, man?
Yeah.
Only thing I could do is make sure that I don't assault anybody sexually, physically, and hold my friends accountable. I only have one friend. He's sitting right behind me.
So at least you're honest.
We kind of hold each other accountable. I mean, that's why I only have one friend, because I can't vouch for any other guys, you know? It says one out of three women have been sexually assaulted or abused in America. And someone's doing the raping, you know? And I don't want to be friends with anybody who's doing that type of stuff.
Of course not. No.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? It's like, you really don't know what people are up to. And you don't really know. I mean, that's why my mom always said, God's watching. Because she's like, he knows everything you're up to.
He knows.
And he knows. Like, oh, God.
Like, the chances of me befriending a rapist is 33% in this country.
Or somebody who
beat this shit. Oh, yeah. Ollie, it's even worse for y'all, especially if you're heterosexual. You're trying to get into a relationship. You're like, has this person ever raped someone before? But, rape is bad.
Rape sucks.
Like, it's just like, why? I'm sorry, man. It's beyond me.
Don't apologize. No,
it's beyond me.
There's a lot of things that I feel are beyond comprehension. Like, sometimes I just don't understand how just a human could want to inflict any type of pain or suffering and whatever. But then I don't know. Like, it drives me crazy just trying to rationalize it, to be honest. I'm just like, why do so many people want to hurt people? Whether it's like abuse or like colonization or like what we're seeing in Palestine, there are so many people that are inflicting pain on others. And I don't understand how they're living with themselves, kind of thing. And that I can trip out about this for like hours, but I shouldn't.
I feel like it's very like, it might sound like basic to be like rape is bad, but like I think we actually like within our, you know, ancestral communities and even within the Islam religion, like we do have a lot of issues when it comes to women and where they stand in the community. So I don't even think it's that wild to say rape is bad, because guess what? People do need to hear that sometimes. And it seems fucked, but it's just the truth. Like, we deal with this sort of like women aren't as equal as men, you know, in the countries we come from, because that's culturally how they're, you know, it's treated. And, you know, within Islam, it's just the unfortunate fact. Yes, people can make Islam what they want to make it for themselves. Like my mom, you, me, like we make it what we want for ourselves. And we have our own set of ethics and morals that we follow. But that's not the case for a lot of people, especially if you live in a country where the majority of your news is propaganda or kind of held to a different standard that's like not legit. Then you don't really know, because you actually like, or, you know, like what happened in Myanmar with Facebook. Like, there's so much going on now that like if you live in a country that doesn't actually really give a shit about the truth, then like you're susceptible to learning all this information. You're susceptible to hearing things that give you a different idea than what's like actually ethical, you know.
And moral
way
and
to live,
right,
you know,
and like how to treat people. I think also so many people that are like trying to make excuses, I think they hear the word rape and they're like, I'm not like that. Not realizing that like it's more than just a physical act of that. It's like what, like there's a structure of misogyny that's always in place, you know what I mean? And that's just like one and like very terrible facet of it, but there's other things that lead to that, whether it's manipulation or coercion or whatever. And I think that's so important to think about, because someone might not be a rapist, but they could also be implementing really toxic, gross behavior and not feel like they're an evil guy or girl or person because X, Y, and Z. They haven't raped someone or something. I don't know if that sounds too intense, but like,
No, you're right. They foster that type of behavior.
Yeah.
That's why I say it cut and dry. We could talk in jargon all we want. Statistics are there. Rape is bad.
Rape is bad. How do we get, like, this is so crazy that this is where
I don't
the
know, but rape is so bad. It's just, it's so bad. Like, I just need somebody to write it down. Rape is bad. And honestly, the numbers aren't adding up. I talked to my homie the other day and I was just like, yo, if one in three women are sexually abused or sexually assaulted, who is raping? Because I've never met somebody who's just like, yeah, man, I raped someone before.
Well, I mean, I think usually in those circumstances.
You think it's a small group of guys raping a big majority of women?
No, I think a lot of situations of sexual abuse or rape, it's inflicted by someone that the person knows. It's like a friend, family member, mm-hmm. or like someone really close to them. And I think it's not really talked about because there's a lot of shame behind it from, I hope, both parties, but usually just the victim or something. But I think that's what makes it so like an extra, I mean, every kind of assault is terrible, obviously, but I think the numbers are there, unfortunately. And I think I have to remember that like so many people are just not good people, even though I want to believe that people can't do bad things or something, but it's just like, I don't know if that makes sense what I'm talking about.
No, it makes 100% sense. And it's unfortunate. I don't even know if my numbers are right at 1/3. I just remember being in a sociology class, like a sex and society class, and that was the number, you know? So forgive me if it's not the number, but yo, that shit crazy. Like, fellas, if you're ever thinking about forcing yourself on somebody, don't even do it, dawg. Just go beat your meat, man. Clear your head, man. Beat your meat real quick.
Yeah. I hope it's that simple. I don't know if it is, but
it's not. It should be. It should be.
I also think like so many things, unfortunately, that obviously sometimes they're thought out and like obviously criminal things like abducting someone or something. But I think a lot of things are done in the moment, in a moment of like a power dynamic. Or
yeah, it's just, that's what I learned too. It's more of a domination power dynamic. It's not even for the sexual pleasure at a certain point.
Yeah. Wow, this has gotten really dark.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I also feel like just not the right person to talk about things ever.
Wait, okay. I looked up some statistics from the RAIN organization. They say every 68 seconds an American is sexually assaulted. A little over every minute.
You know how many people got assaulted, sexually assaulted since we've been on this call?
I mean, what the fuck, dude?
Every 68 seconds somebody gets sexually assaulted in America.
That is a buzzkill.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No. I like your friend's reaction.
Yeah. I don't like that. That's bad.
Yeah. That's real bad. And one out of six women, American women, has been a victim of an attempted or completed rape in her lifetime.
Okay, yeah. So it was one out of six. I'm sorry. I know I
it's
did
okay.
1/3.
That's fine.
Regardless, we all know someone. Like, that's the thing. It's either, I think everyone knows at least one person, if not, they are also a victim of someone that has gone through a very traumatic experience like that. And that's what we have to kind of think about. It's like you, like you're like someone in your family or like your college roommate or whoever it is. It's like we all know someone, multiple someones, in my opinion. And I've been thinking a lot about this, honestly. This is funny that we're talking about this, but there are a lot of movies that show very explicitly like violence and stuff against women. And like there's this one movie, Irreversible, by Gaspar Noé, that a lot of, honestly, mainly men think it's like a perfect fucking movie. And there's literally a 10-minute uncut like rape scene in this movie. It's like the crux of the movie. It's really fucking disturbing. I've only seen it once. I never want to see it again. And I'm on this app called Letterboxd where you can read people's takes on movies, their reviews, you rate them. And all the people that are like, this is perfect, this is so moving, it disturbed me, it worked as a narrative, whatever, they're all men. And there's so many women that are like, how could anyone think this is good? This is so disturbing. This is not cinema. Her entire identity revolves around this assault. And then when she's not being assaulted, she's being sexualized and she's seen as naked. It's Monica Bellucci, too, who's like fucking objectively beautiful. And that's all she's seen as in this movie, is this like beautiful and then broken person at the end. And it's all about the male's perspective and narrative. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about it as like how we present it as a very just like, basically a plot device sometimes. It just really disturbs me the more I think about it because it's so ingrained in our society in different ways.
Yeah, because think about the women who aren't coming forward, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's one out of six, but I mean, what's the real number?
Yeah. Sorry about the movie tangent. I've just been really thinking about this movie a lot and these stupid guys that think it's like fucking perfect. I don't understand. I don't know.
Yeah, this shit weird. Honestly, stay away from weirdos, guys. I know you guys are girls. I'm sure you guys could handle yourselves. But honestly, just make sure y'all are safe, man. And we got to make sure we're safe too, because, I mean, Kelechi is an international sex symbol. So he has, you know, it's not just, it's not exclusive to, you know, men, even though they're
men,
the, they're the clearly the majority, overwhelming majority.
It's just people. Yeah, there's not even a gender to it, really. It's like majority, obviously, towards female identifying people, but it's everywhere. Just people in general are victims of terrible things.
Yeah, let's all be careful. Bake sale just dropped, baby. I know we just talked
yeah,
about
hard pivot. Back to the main topic.
To say, bake sale, you know what I'm saying? It's all about delicious music, sweet audible treats, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
we got the deluxe coming out. Definitely, if I were to end on a note, I would just say rape is bad.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all I could say. And I enjoy talking with y'all. Y'all really are good people. You deserve everything. You know, with iHeartRadio, y'all deserve everything y'all getting right now. You know what I'm saying? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for coming, taking the time to do the show. We really appreciate it.
And seriously, everybody, go listen to Bake Sale and follow Faye on literally everything. He is a joy. And as you all heard in the last hour or whatever, a really good person. So you support good people. And where can people find you on the internet if they don't already know?
I'm real open. Like, if you want to just talk about anything, I am on Instagram. That's where I'm most active, at Faye Weather, PHAYWEATHER. So that's Faye Weather. And that's everywhere on all socials. But pretty responsive, unless you're a weirdo. But yeah. That's where you can find me. Oh, yeah, I forgot one thing. I got merch coming out, fall merch. So the donut hoodies are coming back, the embroidered donut hoodies.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, we got to send you guys some, a care package. So send me over the sizes. Yeah, of course.
An honor.
Yeah, we can't, that. You know, we on that Middle Eastern shit. We can't have you pay for this shit. But yeah, so we'll do that. We're doing that. And they were a hit last year. And I'm really excited. I have a Chilio Bake Sale merch. Chilio is this really renowned artist in Atlanta. OG, he's like 50 years old, but he looks like 20. But he's just this amazing artist. And it was just a pleasure to be able to collaborate on a t-shirt for the city. So a lot of merch coming out, you know, more good music, the deluxe album, Baker's Dozen. And hopefully people still like the shit so we could keep it going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to check out our merch too so we can send you something.
Oh, we'll trade.
Merch exchange.
Cool.
Yeah, we're going to do a trade. Well, everybody, thank you for listening and fucking go listen to Bake Sale. Yeah, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter and AMBIG on Instagram. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm just at Anna Hosni on Twitter.
And yeah, until next time, listen to Bake Sale. Follow Faye Weather. You know what to do.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.